welcome to the Semiconductor Insiders Podcast Series. The goal of this podcast is to bring semiconductor experts together to get to the truth about the matter at hand. We'll get right to the point and not exceed 30 minutes of your time. If you have a topic you would like us to cover, please post it on semiwiki.com and we'll get right to it. Good morning. My guest today is John Pansar. He's the VP of Sales and Marketing at Visora. Welcome to our podcast, John.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
So first, we'd like to start with the story of how you started in semiconductors and what brought you to Visora.
Well, it's a really long story. I've been in the semiconductor industry for more than 30 years. And a long, long time ago, I started with Cypress Semiconductor, when Cypress Semiconductor was a very, very small company. And I spent a good 10 years with them. Since then, I've worked and lived all over the world. And back in 2006, I joined forces with Khaled Malaysia and some other people in a company called Dibcom. Dibcom was sold in 2011 to another French company called Parrot. But in 2015, a bunch of people from Dibcom got together and formed Visora. And that's why I'm at Visora, to make a long story short.
I tell you, Cypress Semiconductor, I worked with them in the early 80s as well, but that was an amazing company. I worked with them here in Silicon Valley, and I still have friendships from some of the management that was there. It was just a very trend-setting company. And so tell me a little bit about Visora. What's the backstory here?
So at Dibcom, as I was mentioning earlier, at Dibcom we did mobile TV receivers, digital TV receivers for cars, for PCs, for cell phones. And the one thing we did at that time was to do our own DSP, because the DSPs that were available back in those days were insufficient. So we did our own design, we did everything, and it was a real pain in the neck. Time moved on, and in 2015, we realized that everything is really there to do a really high-performance signal processor the way we wanted to do it 10 years earlier. And that's where we started. So for 2 years, the engineers, and I'm not an engineer, well, I'm an engineer, but I'm on the sales side. The engineers worked in stealth. And in 2017, we came out with the first product. And the focus was on digital communications. So we did 5G baseband, basically. But the experience we had at Dibcom was that we should not really do silicon. We wanted to be an IP provider. So we started presenting the DSP IP. And as we were meeting the customers said, look, what you have is something that really would suit itself very well to artificial intelligence. So we decided to have a look at that and found out that 90-odd% of the design of the DSP core actually could fit into an AI core. So we released an AI product line as well back in 2018. And we started talking to customers about that as well. And we came to talk to a big German car manufacturer, and they said, it's really nice what you have. But the reality is, for us, it's not AI or signal processing. The fact is, for autonomous driving, you really need to have the ability to deal with both of them. And you need to deal with them in a very, very short latency. So we spent a good 6 quarters developing what became our ADAS, autonomous drive product line, which is a combination of DSP and artificial intelligence. It provides big compute power. So we released the IP core in 2020, in October 2020. And it was an IP core that provides 1 petaflops. So it's really, really significant. It's a significant factor, bigger than anything else on the market. That IP core was selected as the processor IP of the year by the Linde Group in 2020. We got the award just about a year ago. And from that, we decided that, look, the autonomous driving, there's such a huge opportunity and no one is really addressing this in a way that makes it viable, both commercially and technically. So we decided to design a silicon and go out and launch a silicon solution for autonomous driving. But throughout all of this, and I think it's important to mention it, this, throughout all of it, the design has been made to make this as a co-processor, a companion platform. And that makes life so much easier for everyone. And again, that's pretty much it for the time being.
Right. You know, I remember the Linley Award. I go to the conferences, and that was, at the time, that was, you know, the fastest, blazingly fastest chip I'd ever seen. So your architecture combines a DSP with machine learning acceleration, as you said, but it also has high bandwidth memory on chip, right?
Yep, that's it. So what happens is you need to treat data with a very short latency. So one of the key challenges you have when you do designs, computer designs, is how can you feed data at the rate you need? Scaling the core, the processing element, is relatively straightforward, but you need to find a way to constantly feed data to this core so that you're not forcing it to stop. And this sort of data transfer bandwidth is one of the key challenges in the industry right now. We have a fundamentally different architecture where we have our own high performance, tightly coupled memory, coupled with the AI and the DSP cores. And it allows us to scale virtually indefinitely. So the memory scales with the processing power, and it allows us to handle data at very high speeds. The data in these specific cores has a bandwidth of 24 terabytes. Just to give you an idea of what we're talking about. So, I mean, it's significantly higher than what you can do with anything that is off chip. And that's critical, because if you don't need to go off chip, then you do not consume as much power as well. So this has an impact not just on the performance, but also on the power consumption. So we actually provide a really optimal solution with low power and very, very high performance. The third element that comes into something like this is, just because you have a theoretical processing power doesn't necessarily mean you can use it. So the really interesting thing here is how much of the theoretical compute power can you actually use at any given time? So the implementation efficiency is really, really important. And the implementation efficiency will depend on the algorithms that you run. But our architecture is very, very flexible, and we hit very close to theory in most applications. So we're looking at maybe 80+% implementation efficiency. So just to give you an idea, a one petaflops implementation will give you 800 teraflops processing power available.
Right. So can you give a couple of practical examples of what you're talking about here that sets you apart from the other, you know, from the alternatives?
One of the, I would say, almost holy grails in the autonomous driving is something called a particle filter. A particle filter dynamic occupancy grid mapping. And this is a way to represent the environment around the vehicle in a fine grid so that you can keep track of dynamic and static obstacles so you can do the planning. Particle filter is a very, very heavy compute algorithm, and it's been pretty much impossible to do that for autonomous driving in a way that makes it usable. So the way people go about doing this is they do some sort of Kalman filter, extended Kalmans, etc. But all of these have limitations. The particle filter does not have any limitations in that sense. It does not make any assumptions. It will detect what's around and it will process what's around. So to give an idea, there are a number of scientific articles. One of them is an article specifically where there are some benchmarking mentioned, where you have a grid of 4 million cells, 4 megacells. There's 8 million particles in this. We process that in about 3 milliseconds. And this is important because the cycle time of a traditional sensor, radar, LiDAR, cameras in a way, runs around 30 milliseconds. In those 30 milliseconds, you need to process the data, draw conclusions, and make decisions, and still have margin so that you can do whatever else you need to do. When we started looking at this, no one were below 100 milliseconds on smaller particle filters. With the tier chip that we released, or that we announced a couple of weeks back, we're actually doing particle filters of 8 million cells in less than 6 milliseconds. So this is massive, massive, massive. The other thing that's interesting in this is that the particle filter is purely signal processing. It's got nothing to do with AI. If you take AI, there's another reference that is often used. It's called point pillars. And point pillars algorithm is a combination of AI and signal processing. The reference designs that people are looking at show this one running at roughly 13 milliseconds. We run it at sub 1 millisecond, exactly identical algorithms. And a pure AI example would be YOLO V3. YOLO V3 full HD, we run that in 1.5 milliseconds. So it's high performance.
Got it. Hey, so is this completely organic, or did you get help from outside partnerships within the automotive industry?
So what we did, I alluded a bit to this. The development of the architecture is completely in-house, but obviously we've been working very closely with people in the automotive industry. And in fact, the tier chips is the result of a collaboration with a tier one, global tier one. And they would be the ones that would be the first one to use it as well. It's important for us as well to get the validation from the people that ultimately will be using this, so that we're not just arbitrarily deciding to design something which at the end of the day will be suboptimal for the end user.
I've seen that happen. So what's the status of the chip? Have you taped out? Do you have silicon?
So we're in the process of finishing up the design. We will have samples according to plan by the end of the year. And if everything works as per the original schedule, it will be in vehicle in 2024, second half of 24.
Is this a FinFET chip or is it CMOS?
It's CMOS.
Ah, good. Okay, so just a couple other questions. So who are your industry partners? Are you allowed to say?
No, we can't talk about that. Right, unfortunately, I'd love to do it. I think there will be some announcements in a not too distant future, but until we've done the announcements, I'm not allowed to tell that.
Yeah. You know, I've had some podcasts with other people in the automotive industry, and a couple of them actually raised doubts that we would have autonomous cars. I would actually never bet against Elon Musk, so I think we will. But how do you feel about that? You know, how automated are these cars going to be?
Well, there are actually, it's a very, very interesting question, because there are many dimensions to the question. The first one is, will there be the capability of doing full autonomy? And I would say, without doubt, yes. Putting the compute power in the car, that's exactly what we're doing, and it's here and now. Will it be released? That is a slightly different question. A year ago, there were big doubts about anything level three and above. But in, I think in April last year, the German government actually authorized up to level four, and they gave a first license of a level three autonomy to Daimler, if I remember correctly. And the UK government has followed suit, and you can see more and more people lining up to do this. So I think the legislation will be there. The reason we haven't seen it so far is it's not really been commercially viable. The solutions that have been proposed are power hungry and very expensive. And until you get to a point where you can get these devices, these functions integrated in the mid-level vehicle, it will take time. But I think once the acceleration starts, you will see a very, very rapid rollout. And my assumption is that if you have the compute functionality and the compute power available, that will be integrated. And then with all of the over-the-air technology and worst-case garage visit, it's very easy for a car manufacturer and OEM to open up the functionality if and when they see fit. Ultimately, what we provide is a very high performance generic compute chip. So it's not necessarily just autonomous drive. This is a high performance AI and DSP. Do whatever you want with it. Completely algorithm agnostic, completely host processor agnostic.
Yeah, I agree. I think the autonomous vehicles, I think it's really dependent upon processing power, which we're working on every day. And you know, it's a very, it's going to be a very profitable thing at some point in time. So there's a lot of money going into it. Also connectivity, right? So the car is going to have to be connected to the cloud. And you know, the 5G effort is certainly going to help that. But I have no doubt. I agree with you. I think it's going to happen. And certainly within my lifetime, I'm looking forward to it. I don't care to drive. I'd rather just get in the car and go.
Yeah, you know, even today, if you go in one of the newer or modern cars, you will find a lot of autonomous functions already today.
Right. Yeah, I have a Porsche, and excellent German technology, excellent German craftsmanship. I just actually love the car, and it does so much, but not autonomous yet. Not what Tesla claims to have anyway. But I'm really looking forward to it because, you know, in Silicon Valley, I mean, traffic is horrible here. I mean, autonomous cars should be fairly easy since we don't go that fast anymore because we're stuck in traffic all day.
Well, you know, that's exactly where you have the benefit of these things, because the autonomous driving will allow, assuming, I mean, far-fetched, but assuming there's the communication with a V2X, there's the intra-vehicle communication, there are the sensor processing, you will have the ability to get the much smoother ride, and it will allow you to go from point A to point B faster than you do today, because the congestion would be ideally less severe. And you will have a more optimal driving route, or the vehicle will take a more optimal driving route. I think congestion will still be there. It's more a question of how long will you spend. Plus, you can make use of the time when you're stuck in the car anyway.
Yeah. You know, as it is today, I rely 100% on my phone for navigation, right? Because they can take me on the most optimum routes, where I can no longer do that. Based on accidents and traffic congestion. And you know, the biggest worrisome thing for me, and I don't think people really grasp this, but so many people are injured and killed in traffic accidents, and it happens so frequently you really don't even read about it anymore. But if it's with an automated car or if it's with a Tesla, it's front page news, right? So I mean, automated cars will save lives in the long run, so many lives. So I really am hoping and betting on this technology.
Yeah, I think there's statistics that say, I think 80-odd% of the accidents are human related. So, I mean, for sure. For sure.
Yeah. Okay, that's great. Do you have any final thoughts? Anything we haven't covered?
No, I think we covered most of this. Not that I can think of right now.
Well, it's a pleasure meeting you. This is a good stopping point. And thank you again for your time. And I hope to speak with you again, later this year, and we'll see how things are going.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me. I enjoyed it.
That concludes our podcast. Thank you all for listening, and have a great day.